call it Vachon. Or as the French say, Vachon. This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vashon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vashon.
Welcome to the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show on the Voice of Vashon, located on beautiful Vashon Island, rising above the waters of the Salish Sea between Seattle and Tacoma in the state of Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathies. Brian's motto was, less is more, more or less, and he always offered much, much more. Today, our Briefly panel includes, starting with our big board pilot and real-life pilot, morning DJ, and I think he's a reformed Texan, but I'm not sure it's totally taken. Truman O'Brien.
Well, after this last election, yeah, I'm definitely a reformed Texan.
Definitely a reformed Texan. Okay. our legal... And I'm not sure if this is a typo or not. It says legal beagle, but it might mean legal eagle or what exactly is it. I'm not quite sure.
Right? I didn't write it.
But if you had.
If you had, yes, right. What would you, what adjective would you have used, right? So our legal beagle, former Pinkerton guard, among other things, Fulbright scholar Craig Bellis.
How you doing? Actually, my students used to ask me what I'd like to be referred to, Mr., Professor, and I said, well, if you're giving me the option, I'd prefer to be called Master of All Masters.
Master Ludi, yeah, right? Yeah.
So legal St. Bernard.
The mind. Master of Silly Walks.
Yeah. That's right, yes. You'd have some competition. Our avid defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, and top secret engineer, Kevin Jones.
That does sound like me.
Yeah.
Good to be here, Bruce.
Always good to have you. Right. And Kevin and I are slipmates at the yacht club, so our boats bounce off of each other when the cyclones hit.
That's right. Not everybody knows what a slipmate is, so I'm glad you clarified.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Let's keep that clear, right? Yeah. Our lines are tight, right?
Exactly right.
And joining us also is part-time Politico. I'm not sure she's part-time. It's real full-time Politico.
It's getting there.
Part-time, full-time shenanigans coordinator, of course, Amy Dreher.
Hi, good morning.
Good to be here. And I am historian Bruce Hallman. Joining us today is Odin Lonning, who is a Tlingit artist, carver, storyteller, and educator. Good to have you here, Odin.
Yeah. Thank you. Good.
Before we jump in, as usual, let's take a moment and check in about what special things we've experienced this past week. So, Truman, what's been up with you?
Well, I got a couple of things. First of all, on last Tuesday, Tuesday evening, I went to a fundraiser over at the Vashon Theater where they showed a short film, and it was a fundraiser for Ashley Rowan, who is doing this amazing ride down in South America. I think it's in January she goes down, and she rides like 500 kilometers on horses that she's not familiar with. And anyway, it's going to be just an amazing event. But the movie that they showed was a documentary. It's called The Cowboy and the Queen. And it was about Monty Roberts, who's renowned as a horse whisperer, and his relationship with Queen Elizabeth. And really fascinating movie. And the story is just amazing. It followed their lives pretty much from, very young child, her in England during the Blitz, and the fact that they had to get all the children out of London, or they tried to. She was one of them, and they have recordings of her as a kid talking on the radio, talking to parents to help, get the kids out of harm's way. Anyway, it was a fascinating movie. And then, of course, Captain Joe's birthday, and I'm sure Craig and I both attended that. And I have to say that I think it was probably the best birthday party I've ever been to, bar none.
Right on.
Oh, man. I mean, it was outstanding. Craig will talk more about it, I'm sure. But it's at the O Space, dinner, dancing, you name it. Craig will talk more about it. But anyway, it was fabulous. Fabulous.
Sounds incredible. Miss Amy, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm just recovering. We had our Fix Our Ferry Summit this weekend.
Oh.
Yeah, that was my highlight. On Saturday, we had groups from around the Puget Sound come to Mukilteo to listen to, we had a legislative panel and then a legislative local stakeholder panel, all sort of course, talking about our favorite topic, which is the ferries and how to improve our experience with the ferries. I'll say that. And It was a great success. We spent the day talking about the boats. Big shout out to Representative Greg Nance, who's over on Kitsap. He spent the whole day with us.
Wow.
You know, we had some really great legislators, including our own Emily Alvarado, come and spend some time. But, you know, Representative Nance he's our guy in the legislature. Many of our ferry community legislators are doing their best, but man, he's out there leading on it. So we had a great time. We had about 40 folks there, and folks from the San Juans, Bremerton, Whidbey Island, of course, Vashon had a great group, and we committed we're going to do a couple lobby days in Olympia. Of course, session is, you know, it's sort of our zero hour, right, because it's a biennium budget, so it's 25-26, and, you know, if we don't get it guaranteed then, if we don't get our funding secured, we'll be in worse shape than we already are.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, boy.
So, a question. My understanding is out of the whole state legislature, there's how many representatives in the Washington House? 80, 90, something like that.
Yeah.
And 98.
Okay. And there are, you know, we invited legislators from every single community that's touched by a ferry, whether it's a dock or it's a, you know, sort of like Vashon, right, where it's dependent on the ferries. And I'm going to say it was six different districts that we extended emails to. So that's almost 20 legislators who are at least affected by the ferries. So that can be a bigger number. Now, the question is, do all of those legislators really have ferries up there in their priority list? And, you know, we had four come out of that invite group.
So, you know, I remember a few years ago, I don't remember now even the topic, but we took a busload of folks from Vashon to Olympia.
Yeah, we're thinking we're doing some thinking, but we might try to get a water taxi.
Oh, no, that would be
awesome. Might try
to
get on a boat. We're allies and friends with this guy, Peter Phillips, who does a lot of advocating for marine transit around the Sound. And he's looking to see if what the price would be to secure us like a, you know, 200-passenger water taxi down to Olympia.
And then bus on up to the Capitol.
Figure out how to get to the Capitol from there. Right. But that underlines our point that we want more water taxi.
Yeah, good.
Yep. Or you could do what they did several years ago and have everybody dive into the water off the dock to demonstrate how difficult it is to get anywhere.
Boy, I'd volunteer for that.
Well, they did that off of the dock in Seattle as a protest, or pretty effective. We got a lot of PR on that one.
I will be there holding the towels when you get out.
Yeah, you and me both. Good.
But a good measure of the uphill battle we have, you know, if we got 20 out of 98 legislators who represent ferry dependent districts, you know, it's always an uphill battle. So so good to know, Amy. So, Odin, how about you? What's your week been like?
Well, I often answer when someone asks me, how am I doing? I optimistically respond, better all the time.
good.
Right.
It used to be, I'm still vertical. I try to be a little more optimistic than that.
Well, it's good to have you here today. So, Kevin, how about you? What's your week been like?
It's been a good week. I should say there's 147 legislators in our state and 49 districts, so each one has, you know, three, as Amy pointed out. So there's a lot of people we can reach out to about budgets and ferries and other legislative progress. Let's see, this week, MERT, Marine Emergency Response Team, met in terms of doing a drill to make sure that if the island starts to shake and quake, we can help those shoreside communities that may not have road access in the future. Indivisible Vashon membership is increasing. Maybe no surprises there. I will say that one thing looking forward on this Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Presbyterian Church and on Zoom, the Vashon Maury Community Council is meeting. They will be entertaining the recommendations from the Equity Committee. So if you care about equity on the island, inclusion, and social justice, you might want to pop into that meeting. If you are not registered to vote, you can do that at v-mcc.org online and get registered. But I will have to say one of the highlights of the week is as I was meandering around on the island earlier this week, I crossed paths with Sheila Brown.
Oh, yeah.
And Sheila told me that she had a friend from New York who was visiting on Tuesday last, and they had a chance to listen to the show. And it was very memorable for them to hear us talk about Brian and his progressive persuasion. So a shout out to Sheila. It's always great to hear from her. And so thank you so much, Sheila, for your feedback.
Great.
Great. Always good to run into Sheila. She's a bright light of sunshine every time you meet her. So Craig, how about you?
Well, in terms of how I'm doing, I'd say good enough. but I had a good week. Probably two of the highlights. One was Truman mentioned he went to a fundraiser last week. I went to a fundraiser last week too. It's called a poker game.
All right.
And are you the donee? Or are you
no,
the donor?
He is not.
No, I am the donee. I am the recipient.
That's true. That is true. Yes, that's right. Yeah. He is the donee.
Well, I had the cards. You know, what can I say? That was great fun for me. But of course, the other wonderful event that Truman already mentioned was the 90th birthday party of Captain Joe Wubble III. At the O Space, and aside from the fabulous food, and I think there were either four or five different bands that played, we had Delilah pop out of a giant 8-9 foot cake and sing Happy Birthday to Joe, like Marilyn Monroe did to one JFK many years ago. And then I think the highlight, at least for Joe, not for me, of course, were the three belly dancers that did quite a bit of dancing and then came down and danced a little bit with Joe. Actually, Joe was out on the floor dancing solidly for a long time. And finally I said, gee, how do you do it? And he goes, I have hit the wall. I have got to sit down. So he sat down for Troy's last Mustang Sally and let all of his fans come up to him, which was just a remarkable evening. Lynette and I, my wife and I, had a fabulous time. Thank you, Joe, for all of that and everything you do for the island. Mm-hmm. And stay tuned. He follows us, this show.
Yep. Craig, I'm getting the impression that a lesson learned is do not play poker with a Fulbright scholar.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I've had my streaks of the other end of that spectrum, too.
Okay, well, as we scratch our heads about these curious outcomes, we need to understand what's really at play.
Well, I can tell you that on that particular evening, I had zero hands. I won zero hands. None.
Which you got
to
know when to fold them.
Yeah, got to know when to fold. Unfortunately, I folded them a lot.
But no regrets, right?
Oh, no, it was great fun. Great fun.
All right. Today, like every day, is a significant day. It's 45 days until the beginning of the 119th Congress, which is January 3rd, 2025. And we'll get to see whether senators and representatives actually have backbones or not this year. So it'll be very interesting. And it, of course, it's 62 days until the inauguration of the 47th President of the United States on January 20th, 2025. Today in history, a couple interesting things. In 1863, this is the day that Abraham Lincoln delivered his Gettysburg Address. So, and I highly recommend go read the Gettysburg Address. It's only what about a 4-minute talk, but it's some of the most powerful language you will ever read.
And one of the most amazing things for me is to stand in the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C., and read that off the wall. It is very powerful, very powerful.
In 1959, the Ford Motor Company announced the end of the Edsel. So some of the high, yeah, some of the highs and some of the lows of American history.
And it got a bad name for, you know, it wasn't that bad a car.
It was kind of groundbreaking
in some respects.
Yeah, very innovative in some
push
ways.
Push button gear shift and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, but you got to judge a book by the cover.
Yeah, that's true. It was a bit ugly. There's no question.
It just did not make it with the American people for a whole variety of reasons, but...
And named after his son, is that right?
After one of the sons, yes.
Yeah.
Edsel, right, yep, yeah. So 2006, Nintendo released the Wii, which was the first motion control game available commercially. So if you had a Wii, you know, 20 years ago, you are now part of history, right?
That wasn't that long ago, 2006?
Nope.
Yeah.
Oh. Yep. Technology moves fast. And for me, it's one of the most significant days in American history, at least, is November 18th, 1883. Now, you're scratching your heads what happened on that day. Well, that's day that railroads across the United States, which up to that time had 53 different time schedules across the United States on different railroad maps, color-coded, all that sort of things. But on noon of November 18th, 1883, the United States adopted 5 time zones that we still have today. And it revolutionized railroad travel. It also had a huge impact on rural America, where sort of time was always kind of agricultural time, if you will, daylight time, which is sort of like the sun rose, the sun fall. All of a sudden, bam, everybody had a standard time right across the country.
And wasn't it that each town would have their town clock or whatever and set their own time?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And
yep,
so consequently, the trains had to operate.
Train schedules were just always a nightmare.
Oh, I can't even
I get
imagine.
A kick out of the fact that in those areas of the country that are right on the split.
Yeah,
it's confusing enough for those people because whenever they have a party invitation or something, are we talking fast time or slow time?
You know? Exactly right. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It was a fascinating day because all around the country, people gathered, you know, in towns in front of, you know, bank clocks or city clocks or whatever to see that, you know, right at noon on that day because the telegraph. They shut the telegraph down for the morning so that they could send out the signal all across the country. Bam, it's noon.
Yeah,
and everybody
nice.
Set their clocks. People gathered all around to see this marvelous event. And then nothing happened.
Yeah, I think that's the best part of it, right? It's like, we're like, we are masters of time. Yeah. We will decide what time it is here and there, right? We control the universe. But I was, it brought to mind, I was a field organizer for a long time when I was younger, and I was driving, and where I was right on a time zone, and I had a call. Right. And I had a call. I think it was like 10 a.m. Right. So I had a 10 a.m. call and I'm looking at myself and I'm realizing that I'm like driving. I can see the sign ahead that says I'm going to the next time zone. And I'm like, what time is my call? Right. Like if my call is 10, right, it's 10 here now. But in, you know, 100 yards, it's going to be 11 a.m. What time is my
really?
Call? Right. But
right.
Yes, that puts paid to our sort of we're the masters of time.
Yeah,
for sure. So November is Native American Heritage Month, and I thought it would be appropriate for us to invite Odin Lonning, a well-known Vashon artist, a carver, storyteller, educator, who's of Tlingit descent, to come in and talk to us a little bit. So, Odin, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about how you got on Vashon and what you've been up to these days.
Well, been, I guess you would say, an artist ever since my mother took me to see a performance of a traditional dance group in Juneau. I was 10 years old, and I like to think that she knew in her mind that that's all it would take. She was of the boarding school generation, so didn't speak language. You know, any knowledge of the culture was suppressed. I'm sure everybody's familiar with that whole dark history. But she was, if my theory was correct about her, all she had to, having to do was show me what the culture looked like, and I would go from there. Turned out to be accurate. Once I saw this dance group called the Gisan Dancers from Haines, I had to know everything I could possibly learn. So started looking at books, copying designs, and going forward, teaching myself how to draw, paint, carve, to the point of where I'm at today, doing what is traditional, which is once you reach a certain level of knowledge and skill, you are to pass it on, to share it. And that's exactly where I'm at now. And I would say that art has been my canoe, so to speak, carrying me everywhere, up and down the West Coast, as far over east as Chicago, a lot of time in the Southwest, New Mexico, Arizona. It's what brought me to Vashon. I had a request from Israel Shotridge, totem carver, also Clinkett from Ketchikan. We refer to ourselves as, I should say some Clinkett artists often will include Northern or Southern. Not that that makes any difference, but geographically, Ketchikan is Southern Southeast Alaska, and where I'm from is considered Northern. There's a little bit of style difference, but anyway, living in Seattle, came over here to help him with some projects, did an art show, which was based on painted hand drums, something that I had a lot of practice doing at that time, before that time, and met my wife, Orca Annie, because she was looking for specifically natives or a native artist that might be like-minded in regards to killer whales and what was going on and still is going on with our local killer whale population.
Great. Interesting.
Yep. Yana, Odin, I'm curious if you could, I'm sure this is a huge subject, but if you could tell us a little bit about the Clinkett, your Clinkett heritage and culture, so people get somewhat of a feel for that.
Well, yeah, one of the things when I do presentations, educational presentations, whether it's for grade school, high school, college, as in you invited me years ago to Green River, mm-hmm. and that is college level. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I often begin with, because I run into people every now and then, and they will have a comment or make comments that refer to the way that whatever tribe used to do things, the Clinkett people used to do mm-hmm. to the point where I started when in a conversation like that, I would say, excuse me, I'm standing right here. And yeah. My mother was Clinkett, you know, that type of thing. But I use the term living culture, especially when I'm, you know, addressing children, because that's a good way to start off, meaning that nothing has been forgotten. The language is spoken. All of the art forms are practiced. Some of the most, Well, I consider them famous. The example is the Chilkat woven dance robe, woven out of mountain goat wool, hand woven. Makes me tense just watching women do beadwork or hand weaving. It's extremely complex, but again, everything that was done is done today, and pride is at a very high level. There's an event in Juneau, it's called Celebration. It happens every 2 years, and it's where dance groups from all over Alaska, but primarily Southeast Alaska, gather for a whole weekend from morning till night, nonstop dancing, singing, storytelling, speech making. And it's an event that has gotten so big that it's outgrown the Centennial Hall, which is the convention center in Juneau. I think the last time I heard this last celebration, the number of dance group was up to 78,
wow.
And many of them children's dance groups made up of just strictly children up to the high school level. I have I think it's called a panoramic photograph of all of the dancers standing in front of, well, this is from years ago, but standing in front of the Centennial Hall. I don't know how many dancers are in the photograph, but it's quite an impressive photograph. I think it's 5 feet long. Hmm. And I recently brought it to Chautauqua Elementary when I was doing an artist in schools program. And I put it on a table and I wrote underneath it, for Tlingit people, this is what pride looks like. And I got good comments from the teachers for doing that, because it opened the discussion with students. What is the definition of pride, and what are you proud of in regards to your ancestors, mother and father, and that type of thing? So, yeah, thanks to my mother, I'm now an artist, a traditional dancer, not a fluent language speaker, but I'm working on it. It's a difficult language to learn. I would give you some samples, but I don't want to spit on anybody. It's a very guttural sounding language. And a cultural educator, that means, again, I'm sharing everything I've learned and continue to learn.
Do you know how far back the Tlingit go, or how many generations it goes back? Or do you look at it even that way?
Not really. You know, there's the discussion or argument about where did Native people in Alaska come from? Were they there already? Did they come across the land bridge? Mm-hmm. A little bit of both. The land bridge theory makes sense, and there are clues to that, which that's a whole other, right. Maybe an interesting show. Maybe you'll invite me back for that. One of the things I find really interesting is some of the very old Tlingit songs have lyrics that refer to traveling under the ice to get out to the coast. Mm. So that, to me, is kind of a hint of coming from the interior down to the coast.
Mm. Yeah. You know, speaking of Alaska, I spent a lot of time in Alaska. I used to work for Alaska Airlines, so I was there quite a bit. Based in Anchorage for 4 years. And I had a number of friends who were actually Inuit from Barrow and up on the slope. But when we were talking about time, I have to tell you one quick story. There were some mechanics were working on an aircraft, not one of ours, but another aircraft. And one of the white guys said, "Oh my gosh, it's 12 o'clock. It's time to eat." And one of the native fellows that was working on there said, only a white man would need a clock to tell him when he's hungry. So speaking of time, I thought that was kind of an interesting story. So you grew up in Juneau then?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I loved Juneau. I've spent quite a bit of time there. How was that growing up? I mean, how was that experience for you?
Well, it influenced my attitude about a lot of things, about nature. I mean, instead of sports, my playground was ridge tops, mountain valleys, the beach. Wildlife was a big part of life. My dad had a small fishing boat for a while, a lot of time spent on the water. And I would have to say one thing that I would put in the pride category was the fact that being perhaps a small, isolated town, meaning, you know, from the rest of United States, prejudice was not something that was common at all. There, I never experienced any prejudice throughout my childhood or into high school years. When I was in grade school, one of my best friends was an overweight black guy. That's a, kind of a way to picture it. But so that's something that influenced me from then on.
You know, that isolation and talking about sports, I know that that we used to haul sports teams like down to Ketchikan or over to Petersburg. And it always fascinated me that these kids, although they were isolated in Juneau, had these trips that got them outside of that, you know, and what a wonderful experience for them. And the camaraderie that built was really huge, I thought. Anyway, I find that fascinating, and I'm fascinated. I do have one question. I know that right now Juneau is a big cruise ship destination, and there can be like three or four of these ships there at one time. How do the locals feel about the cruise ships?
Well, from what I understand, it's been quite a while since I've been back in Juneau, but I have one sister that still lives in Juneau, and I think she's a good indicator of the general attitude, which is kind of frustration, even though it's really a economic driver for the community, obviously. When the cruise ships come in, they take over the town, of course, which is true of a lot of different places. And I would say, is it something that is really annoying? Probably not. I would say a mild annoyance, if anything.
Yeah. I always found that the streets were mobbed when the cruise ship comes in. But boy, they bring a lot of money into the community. I love to see that. So,
Odin, you mentioned earlier your inspiration as an artist, but maybe you could tell us about your journey as an artist. Like, I imagine the first picking up of a paintbrush, the first time an adze or chisel met wood. What kind of, how did that go for you? And what do you want to share with us about that journey, how it started, and where you are now?
Well, I guess when I think about it, going back to grade school, you know how sometimes there will be holiday mural projects. Kids will be asked to illustrate, you know, things about Thanksgiving or Halloween, and I recall always being asked to be one of the students to help with drawing the murals. So obviously I had some ability in drawing and copying, which later when I became interested in Native art, and not just Tlingit, but pretty much any indigenous art style, which included designing. So after, you know, as I mentioned, seeing that first traditional dance group and looking at the regalia, the headgear, the masks and things, and then starting to look in books in the library and copying designs, I realized that I had a knack for copying accurately. And of course, as time went on, I got better and better and better at it. So I would say that was the foundation. And then watching Carver's work, there have been some, I would say, famous carvers that visited Juneau when I was in probably junior high and high school, and one of them was Nathan Jackson, well-known amongst carvers, living in Ketchikan. I think he still has a, I don't, it's part of a culture center where carvers will demonstrate. Yeah.
They have their totem poles are there that they're working
demonstrating,
on. Tourists can come and see it.
Yeah, canoe carving, totem carving. Yeah. And he was a mentor influence, I would say. I watched him work on three different poles in Juneau. And he was very encouraging at that time. I think by high school, I had this little folding photo book of things that I had done, you know, nothing grand, nothing on the scale of totems, but, you know, wall pieces and small boxes. And I was brave enough to show it to him. And his comment was, I would say, very encouraging. He said, "Yeah, I think you have what it takes. Don't stop." And I took his advice. So watching other carvers work, when it comes to wood carving, it's, I suppose you could call it technical, but not like learning to handle social media or or anything of that nature, which is my next, I'll be so bold as to say, that's the next thing I need to really learn, marketing and making use of that as a tool instead of the ads and the carving knife. But and the other thing that is probably a good thing for someone who shares, an instructor, a teacher, whatever word you want to use, you should always have an attitude of you never stop learning. Mm-hmm. My wife likes to refer to me as a master carver, which is okay, I suppose. I like the term journeyman for all of its different meanings. So.
And so you've kind of journeyed here to Vashon Island, and you have a show up at Vino Olio. Is there a theme to the show? What brought you to the show? What did you want to do with the show? What can we see there?
Well, after choosing pieces, of which I have a few, thanks to the fact of less art shows, easily accessible, and the fact that doing road shows has become really expensive, so I wound up with quite a collection of various art pieces over the years. But after putting up the pieces, I realized that if there was a theme, it's basically sea life. There are two pieces that focus on salmon. There's one that's called Ocean of Wisdom, which has a number of different animals, humpback whale, octopus, river otter, killer whale, of course. So the majority of the pieces, I think there are 10, are sea life, with the exception of, and this was accidental, and sadly, I don't think there are many people outside of maybe Bruce that might appreciate with knowledge this fact. The two pieces that are not sea life are a drum that has an eagle and a carved yellow cedar piece with a raven, which are the two moieties. People use the word clan, but that's not really accurate. But natives use the word side. I belong to the eagle side or the raven side. And traditionally, that's a marriage custom. One must marry the opposite. Mm. So the two pieces that aren't sea life are the cultural symbol of balance, shall we say.
So as I mentioned, this is Truman again. I've spent a fair amount of time in Alaska and actually up on the North Slope and was very honored to be able to go out onto the pack ice to a whaling camp with the Inuits. And then the next year I was able to take my daughter up, and we spent the day not out on the ice because of the they had just gotten their first whale of the season. And so they had the tradition was that the whole village would come out and share a meal of this first whale. And so my daughter, the little short blonde, was there at the table with these native women with their ulu and cutting up whale meat, which was a very unique experience for her. And for me, I got to sit down with the patriarch and on the floor and hear some of his stories. And the stories, of course, were wonderful. And I'm wondering for you, what stories do you like to tell and which ones are important that shares your tradition?
In related to fishing?
Oh, whatever. Yeah, anything.
Well, I have, fond memories, especially during grade school years, going out with my family, quite often, just camping trips, go out for a whole weekend and camp on an island and fish for salmon and halibut. Right. And later on in high school years, going out with my uncle for the same thing and experiencing Dungeness crab right out of the water onto the beach and freshly, about as fresh as you can get.
Oh, yeah.
and that type of thing. And experiencing wildlife really close up, watching river otters in the early morning coming up from the beach, and just that type of thing. It obviously locked into my soul. And mm-hmm. now when I plan to do, or when I will do, other cultural presentations, art-related, I plan to weave in knowledge of nature, information about wildlife, especially for students that might have been born in Seattle or moved to Seattle and never really experienced wilderness. Mm. One of the things I recently learned was the population of Alaska Natives in the Seattle area. Probably now, years ago, this is when I first heard a figure, 4,500 Alaska Natives.
Wow.
I think that was about 8 years ago that I heard that, so I'm sure it's over 5,000 now. And going back before I had heard that figure, I was starting to experience coastal native people in the Seattle area with what I call a hunger for
knowledge,
the art, the culture, and wanting to reconnect. And that word connect also applies to nature and the knowledge of. And so that's something that I plan to include in my sharing.
Speaking of that, years ago, working with Vashon Forest Stewards, we delivered a cedar log to Israel. And he had a commission to do a cemetery, the entrance to the cemetery up in Nea Bay. Mm. And he had all of these drawings on the wall of what he had planned to do with this, carving this log. And I'm curious, how much planning, I mean, obviously there's got to be a fair amount of planning that goes into any of your projects. And can you tell us about that process?
Well, yeah, there's the traditional and then contemporary. I was lucky enough to be asked to do a couple of polls, I think now 4 years ago, for the Archdiocese of Seattle, Christ Our Hope. The Archdiocese has a building, Josephinum Building, I think is the name of it. It was the biggest hotel in Seattle, going back to the early days of, you know, the growth of Seattle, located Second and Stewart. When it was a hotel, there was a lobby that had a fireplace that was decorated with a Northwest Coast theme. Mm. It had two cast cement totems that were made back east, I heard, that had no meaning at all. Yeah. And, of course, the fireplace was done with nice carpentry work. There was tile work above the fireplace. But time went on. It was boarded up, buried, so to speak. Later years, there was remodeling. It was discovered, and somebody decided that it should be redone, brought back to better than its original appearance. So they wanted actual, real totems carved that would have some meaning. And their suggestion or request of me was to create two 11-foot tall poles that reflected the history of the church and Native people. Hmm. So that process of planning what was to be the imagery, that took about 2 weeks of meeting with the board members of the Christ Our Hope. I think it wound up being 2, 4, 6, a total of 12 figures, and reflecting important people within the church and history and that type of thing, as well as Native important.
So I have a stupid question, I think. Do all of the totem poles reflect a story, one story, or are they reflective of?
Well, it's always been both. There are poles that illustrate up to, I think, if I can remember, the most stories illustrated on a pole being about 8.
Wow.
And sometimes that can be done just with one figure. Hmm. So if a pole is 20 feet high, you have a good amount of space, if you know how to do it, to illustrate different stories. And, of course, going back in time, the original purpose was family history, honoring clans and important events. And it's developed but still remains a way to communicate and share stories.
Do you have a favorite cultural story, be it a family story, a nature story, that's typically incorporated in a totem?
Well, that's almost like asking if you have a favorite song.
Song, exactly. Yeah.
And there's so many different ways to answer that. There was mention of me as a storyteller, which is, I would put that in my to-do list, something I'm working on. I would not call myself a storyteller. I really respect that skill. Mm-hmm. There is a slalom artist and storyteller, Roger Fernandez, who, in my opinion, is one of the best that live in the Seattle area, because he has such a natural, comfortable style and very animated. And I every time I watch a video of him, whether it's, he's been here to Vashon, I think, more than a few times, and been filmed, and I find myself appreciating more and more, watching little details of how he talks about moral stories and things. But do I have any favorites? I would say not really. More accurate would be a category of stories, which would be moral stories, simply because I think there's always room for learning how to behave properly, whether you're a child or an adult.
Indeed.
I would take you to task and say that you are indeed a storyteller. You tell your stories via your art rather than orally, but you are indeed a storyteller, with no question.
One quick question that I think I'm curious: are there other Tlingit residents on Vashon?
Well, I've only been, besides Israel, I've been hearing rumors and haven't contacted yet, but because of my growing style of being out and talking with more and more people all the time, I'm constantly hearing about this and that or this person. So I've heard of at least two other part Tlingit. Well, we're all mixed in some way or another. I'm half Norwegian and half Tlingit. I'm going to actively seek out these people because something has started to form itself, which I'm going to call a native co-op, native artist co-op, which I belonged to years ago in Seattle, and I haven't heard of anything existing since the way it did back in 92 to 98. But on Vashon, I've met three different Lakota, one Apache woman, one Aleut woman, and have yet to find out about these other Tlingit or part Tlingit. So the idea that some of us have been talking about is to actually form a native co-op or coalition for the purpose of doing events, educating the public, sharing multiple tribal cultures. And I think it's a great concept. And
it is a great concept, yeah.
Kevin, did you have a question?
Well, a couple of things. As an admirer of carvings from Alert Bay to Victoria, and anybody who would like to see and understand that storytelling aspect, Hillary Stewart has a wonderful book, Looking at Totems. Hillary is grew up on Quadra Island, about mid-Vancouver Island. So if anybody wants to pursue that, and the stories, of course, are rich and reflecting of the cultural and the heritage. But the thing that I wanted to ask about is the hydrophone project with you and your wife, Orca Annie, to preserve the southern resident orca. What would you like to tell us about that?
Well, it... Again, that could be its own hour-long or more yes. program. That one of the things that, if I might toss this in, it's worth mentioning. Another traditional native value is to honor people that have helped you or put you on the path that you're on. And again, that's something that I will share with students, that honoring people is a proper thing to do. And I am very grateful for meeting Orca Annie and the fact that she has now, you know, been my wife since 1999. the knowledge and wisdom about so many different things. But just in the category of killer whales, learned a great deal, and I'm still am learning. But she had the first real hydrophone on Vashon, meaning collecting data and sharing it with NOAA, located on the west side of Vashon, Kolvos Pass. No longer, because we, I think one of the ways that she put it once in talking with some people about the hydrophone and the fact that it's not still, we were Airbnb'd off of the west side on the water. And so, and one of the things that came from our collaboration and the Vashon Hydrophone Project was, and again, this is something from Orca Annie, Kichuka, an educational program that combines her knowledge of killer whales with my knowledge of coastal native culture. Those two things put together, we've been doing as presentations on Vashon and Friday Harbor, the Whale Museum, Naturalist Program, and on it goes. So that's something that I feel very proud of and feel that it's something worth honoring.
So I just have to ask, do you have an eagle-raven balance in your marriage?
An eagle-raven?
Balance. Do you have an eagle or a raven? Are you...
Oh, the marriage tradition
mm-hmm,
of...
Yeah.
Well, what I need to do for both...
That sounds like a loaded question to me.
I mean, you know, it was very thought-provoking, you know, sort of that balance.
Oh, well, yeah. Another way of... asking that, and I've actually had this question many times over the years. Does that tradition of if you're an eagle, you must marry a raven, is that still carried on? And of course, simply because of the way populations grow, it's not practical and it doesn't work anymore. You have such a mixture of all different peoples. Even in the smaller traditional villages, you're not going to have people that are following that tradition. And I was going to say one of the biggest challenges that I have is to find a way to have Orca Annie adopted into a killer whale so that killer whale would be her crest, as the shark is my crest.
Okay.
Fascinating. Okay. Hey, this hour has flown by, and Odin, we really appreciate you coming in and sharing with us, and it's just been a fascinating conversation. As we draw to the end of this hour, Craig, maybe you can give us a little bit about what is happening next week.
Yeah, we've got singer-songwriter Dr. J. David Hawkins will be joining us on the island. He's primarily, I think, known for his singing and songwriting, but he is a endowed professor emeritus at the University of Washington School of Social Work and done tremendous groundbreaking work in the area of promotion of life success, prevention of delinquent behavior and drug use, and the actual reduction of aggravated assaults and robberies in various areas using technique. So he'll be here to talk to us about that.
Sounds fascinating. So for Odin, for Amy, for Truman, Craig, Kevin, and myself, wishing you a fond farewell for the week. Please join us next week for more intelligent discussion of current happenings on and off of Vashon Island. Thank you.